Hey, how's it going? All right, how are we going? 3, 2, 1, and scene. Hey guys, how are you? Welcome to the newest episode of the Walking Alone podcast. As always, I'm still Diego. That's still Cornell.
Hey.
How you doing? I'm glad to see you, buddy.
Yeah.
Today, we're in the beautiful offices of Outlier in Williamsburg with co-founder Abe Burmeister. Yep. I always want to say it backwards for some reason now.
However you want to say it, it works.
Abe B. How are you, Abe?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us. I know you guys are having a big sale this weekend and busy times here.
It's hectic. We don't do this kind of thing very often. So mm-hmm. It's the first sample sale, any sort of sale really, in 2 years.
So. Yeah. I remember when Black Friday came around, I had my fingers crossed I was going to be able to get something.
And we're like, no, that's not our style.
Exactly. Yeah. We're better than that. For the few of you who don't know what the brand is, you've told the story a million times, and I want to just get the basic downs. You were a graphic designer. You commuted everywhere on your bike. You're sick of ruining pants.
Yeah. I was like, I started riding my bike everywhere, and you know, I was like, this is a better way to get around the city.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. How could you know? I grew up in New York, and I was like, "How did I not figure this out?"
It feels like you're hacking the system. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I was like, "Man, how did I not figure this out?" And then I was like, "Fuck! I'm like ruining all my jeans, and if I gotta go to a meeting, then you know, I can't basically because I don't want to ruin my nice pants."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "There's got to be a better way to do this, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So, I went shopping. I was like, all right, I'm going to go buy a pair of pants. I can ride my bike to a business meeting. It's maybe more durable than my jeans.
Yeah.
So I can wear it every day. And I couldn't find anything. I was like, what the hell? You know?
You figured it'd be a one-stop shop kind of thing.
Yeah, I figured I'd spend an afternoon and I'd get a cool pair of pants and like I'd be, you know, I'd go to work. And instead, I kept on looking and looking, trying to figure it out. And finally, I hit this point where I was like, man, if I want this to happen, I got to do it myself. And so I figured out how to make pants. I, you know, got really deep into the materials. And mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Outlier was born.
That's awesome. Yeah. Have you always been that way? Because I feel like most people, if it doesn't work out, they just settle for the second best option.
I'm pretty stubborn.
Yeah, it's a stubbornness thing. I think it's like, no, I want this. I'm going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like sometimes you give up for a second, but then the problem persists and you just got to either going to address it or it's going to just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just dove in and figured it out.
Mm-hmm. And the first pair of pants, the OGs, that material you found at like a camping store, right? Some kind of.
Yeah, we found it in a pair of shorts, actually. And we actually called up the people making the shorts and I was like, hey, have you ever thought about making pants out of this
mm-hmm.
stuff? And they were like, no.
And they just hung
like,
up. No idiot.
Well, it's funny, actually. It was a British company, and pants means underwear in England. So maybe they got it. I realized afterwards. I was like, maybe they got confused. But
you
I was
said
like,
knickers. What do they call pants?
I think you got it.
I got knickers.
Yeah,
yes.
Trousers. Yeah,
there you go.
Trousers.
that was my England.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. So, that was that, and I was like, this is the stuff, and then I had to figure out how to get it, and once I got it, it was all about the garment district, really. So.
Mm-hmm.
New York used to make 90% of the manufactured clothes in America. You know, people used to make their own clothes, so it
mm-hmm.
wasn't like all the clothes were coming from New York, but most people were making their own, and if you got something that was pre-made, you were, you know, it was coming out of New York, basically. And so it's nothing like that now, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, almost everything comes from Asia, but there's still like the remnants of like this century-old industry, and it's still like pretty powerful. You can get a lot of stuff done in Midtown Manhattan, a couple blocks from Times Square. So I just kind of dived in and started asking questions and eventually had some pants and met Tyler and we started a company and it's been crazy ever since.
Yeah, and that was 2008, 2009?
2008. Me and Tyler met in March of 2008. So I already had the pants by then. And
oh, okay.
I had the pants and in the beginnings of a logo, maybe a little
great logo,
like
by the way. It's like
you.
The best logo.
Thank you.
Eric did a great job with our logo. I think our logo is very good. But
it's
yeah,
cool.
Just so minimalist, but still like very,
yeah.
Very graphic designy.
Yeah. It's not a Tyler me. I did the first version. I mean, we had references. We you know, Black Swan is a symbol of an outlier, and turned out, you know, since we started looking around at Black Swan images, and it turns out there were a couple record labels, one in the 20s in Harlem that Louis Armstrong was on.
Oh, wow.
Black Swan Records, and then another that was kind of a spinoff of Trojan Records that they used to, like, sell records in England or something.
You know what's funny? It's funny you mentioned that. I was just listening to, like, a Trojan reggae comp.
Yeah.
Like, I've been listening to it all week. And that, yeah, that logo is awesome.
Yeah, so we kind of found one of these old record labels and had a Black Swan on it, and we kind of riffed off that. We didn't copy it, obviously, but we were like, "All right, this is a cool start. Let's build off of it." And then I can't take all the credit. Had a couple other graphic designers kind of put more polish on it. Roland Tienko deserves a lot of credit for that too. So,
I'm seeing a logo on the sticker on this sticker chair here. That's the reason I actually heard about you guys. The Viking with the red hair.
The John Probably. Yeah.
I was in Florida, and I was really into bikes, and his blog was one of my favorite things ever. And one of the reasons I moved to New York, and he posted a blog post about you guys, like, really early on. And I remember, like, thinking, like, oh, this looks really interesting. And I'm not a person, I'm not like I don't want to say fashion-y, because fashion, actually, everyone is a fashion. I'm not super into buying clothes.
Yeah, you look so good.
I like things that work. I like things that are made well. I like that technical aspect of it. And seeing that, and then seeing how much he rides his bike, and I rode my bike constantly. Once I moved to New York, I found out you guys had a store over on, like, near Meeker and...
right across the street from here. Really.
Yeah, it was right there. Yeah. I went there on my birthday in 2010, and I got a pair of the shorts.
Oh, nice.
And I've worn them... Sincerely, every summer, all summer, I still have them. And I've only had to do, like, just, like, pocket stitching again on it, because it had that mesh pocking on the front. It's my favorite shorts I've ever worn. And it's the kind of thing.
That's what we like to hear.
Exactly. And I remember watching a video about you talking about the brand and saying that you want to make clothes that people reach for without even thinking. Their favorite shirt, their favorite pair of pants.
Exactly. I mean, that's all you need, right?
That's all you need.
Like, you dudes look in their closet, and they might be full of crap, and they grab the same five things.
Yeah.
Right? I want
to
make those five things.
Yeah, I had to fight myself not to grab my button down, because I've worn it like three times this week already, and I kind of felt like, you know when guys go like to a Metallica concert, but they're wearing a Metallica shirt?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that if I came here today like that. Yeah. So I wore a different button down. I apologize. I don't mean to be rude.
No,
I'm wearing the pants.
Good. No, I don't. Yeah, that's great. It's weird when I see people, you know, wearing 100% outlier. That's weird, actually.
Yeah.
It's like, I kind of want to make it happen. But at the same time, like, we're not the only clothing company. There's a lot of other people doing good stuff out there. So
they
mix
do,
it up a little bit.
They do, absolutely. But I think what you guys have done such a good job with, again, speaking as someone who owns your clothing, is you've gained my trust. And that when you make something, I know you're making it not because the profit, but because there is a need for it. And you've done something special with that garment, and that if I buy it, I'm going to really enjoy it. I'm really going to get the use out of it. So whenever you guys do post something, I go, okay, there's a reason for this.
All right. Well, that's, yeah.
Like the $50 keychain that I really want.
We're going to try and get the price down on that.
Okay, it's awesome.
No. I mean, it's actually really interesting. That was something we kind of really rushed out. And it's more expensive than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I say that because it's crazy. People can tell. Like, so that wasn't, didn't do that well, actually. We were shocked because we're like, all right, this price point's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the cheapest things we have. Like,
yeah.
And then people were just like, that's too expensive. And I'm like, okay, you're probably right. Let's look at this.
Yeah.
Because people know. It's funny. We give our customers are awesome.
Yeah.
They can figure things out. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to try and it really is a better keychain. I swear to God.
Exactly. But I believe you.
Yeah.
Know?
It's subtle. It's not going to change your life, but it makes you get your keys a little bit quicker. It's a little bit easier to access them, and they stay secure, and it's good.
Yeah. And that's like for me, I'm sorry, Carla. I ride my bike everywhere, and I grab my keys 45 times a day. It's just constant. And it's just like, if it's something easier and better, then why the hell not?
Yeah. You putting it on your belt loop or on your belt?
Yeah, my belt loop.
Yeah, on your belt loop, it's not going to change your life. It's a better keychain for attaching to your belt.
Yeah.
On your belt loop, it's about the same action.
Okay.
I mean, there's magnet to it, but
And the thing I like about it, though, is like the access, though, because, you know, I'll ride in gloves sometimes, and I can't. I keep my keys on a carabiner, so I can't always easily grab them with my gloves. Cause I don't have like a whole lot of dexterity, especially when it's like cold outside.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice just to have like that access, just to kind of pull it, you know.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier in gloves. It's not like dramatic. We could try and there's more to be done on that product too. You know, like we have to figure it out. It's a little expensive when you're dealing with these cast parts and stuff. So, I would love to make it with different materials, and then we could probably calibrate it even more, make it more glovable and that kind of stuff. But long term project.
That's I think the cool thing about what you've done is that even on looking at your subreddit, you've been really honest with how happy you are with certain products. And I saw someone asked you a question about is something as good as this other thing? I can't remember what it was. I think it was the shirt in comparison to some pants. And you're like, no, not yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it's like, I feel like most brands, anyone, especially people that own the brand, they just try and just like, this is the best. We did it. Done. You should buy it.
No, we're never done.
That's good.
Ask their employees.
Good.
They'll tell you. Not necessarily happily about that.
Yeah. Sorry, Jesse.
We're always trying to make things better. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing and a curse kind of thing.
Yeah. That's Cornell and I can tell you, that's a very martial arts way of thinking. It's just A, being very honest, and B, being driven to be better at all times and knowing your mistakes or knowing your weaknesses. That makes people better, makes a brand better.
Yeah. You got to polish your stone.
Yeah.
What?
Polish your stone.
Oh. It's is
like
that a saying?
Like my martial arts. You have like your art is your stone, and you just have to keep polishing the stone to keep it, you know, keep making it a little.
I think you watch Karate Kid too many times.
You can never watch Karate Kid too many times, man.
Good point.
Know. Yeah.
So you grew up here? Are you from here originally?
Yeah, I grew up in Manhattan, uptown, 113th Street.
Whoa, so that's really uptown.
Yeah, it's where I'm from. So
yeah.
It's.
How long have you been in Brooklyn now?
In and out for too long, like 15 years, something like that. You know, I spent some time traveling outside of the city. But yeah, I've been in and around like North Brooklyn. I was in South Brooklyn too. So yeah, about a little more than 15 years.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think you guys have done so well, and a lot of people do, is where they'll take something from one world and add it into a world that hasn't really had that yet and kind of evolved in that way. Is there things that now that you're looking outside of what you have been looking at to like bring into menswear and fashion, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, we're always like hunting. Like I'm about to fly out of town to go to Europe and just do more hunting, basically. We're looking for new materials always. So when we started, it was really about, going to the outdoor world. It was, you know, things were kind of laid out for us. We got really lucky in certain ways. So we figured out where the outdoor materials were sold, and we just kind of went in there with the menswear, urban type of eye and said, like, you know, and which also meant we were willing to spend a little more money than a lot of outdoor companies. And there was just a realm of material that we could just kind of grab. A lot of it's like, it's really old school, actually, and I don't know how we got this skill, but, you know, the few people who kind of cross between the fashion and the outdoor worlds are like, yeah, you guys shop by hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? We go and touch and feel the stuff first, whereas a lot of products out there, both in fashion and in outdoor, are built out of a spreadsheet, you know? Like, there's some spreadsheet somebody made that says we need to make X amount of polo shirts or X amount of, you know, waterproof jackets, and they need to cost this much, and they need to have these functions. Right, and when you build a product like that, like, the touch of the product is lost. You know, it's like people are putting together the math and being like, okay, I got to get this fabric at this price, and, you know, the corners get cut, and, you know, it's a different type of experience. Oh. So we, like, kind of build it from the feel up.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than ordering a jacket online. I have had experience with this. I'll leave the name of the company nameless. Ordered it. Like, it looked great. Reviews were awesome. I ordered it, came, and feeling it, I was like, what did I just get? It was like super stiff. I mean, I know it was a waterproof jacket, but it was stiff, and like the lining was just crap. And I was like, man, I should have gone to a showroom or a retailer or something.
I can't. I think from playing hockey, when I'd buy, especially gloves, like it all be based on how it feels in my hand, like how much it flex, the material. It just, I had to feel it. Like I couldn't understand people were buying certain things like that online with no idea of the hand weight or how it felt in this with a stick. Like, and that's like I've bought a lot of stuff from you guys, and I only do it when I come here. Like, I like the idea of being able to look at it and try it on.
That's like the crazy irony is we're doing this like touch-based stuff, but we're online.
Yeah.
But it's the only way we can do it what we do. So, I don't know. We always take the hard way, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, we couldn't. If we were trying to sell these things to Barney's or whatever, like they cost twice as much, three times as much. And,
wow.
Mm-hmm. That was a really fundamental moment I had when I had these pants. I wore them for like a year, basically. And I was like, these are freaking awesome. I wear them every day. Like, I think like maybe other people would appreciate them, like them. And I figured out how much it cost me. And I was like, man, I think I made like three samples and each cost like $600 each.
When wow.
Holy smokes.
But I was like, that's just prototyping, whatever,
of course.
Right? So like, that didn't bother me too much, you know, and it was like piece by piece. It wasn't like a one shot thing. But then I like started really doing the math, and I was like, man, if I sell it to Barney's, they'd be $600 too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, I've never bought $600 pants before, like unless they came with a suit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, all right, I got to figure out how to get these to like, you know, premium denim. Mm-hmm. I can understand that world, you know?
Yeah. Like APC kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, all right, that's like in the realm where I can see myself buying something, and I can see other people buying, and I see there's a market there.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only way I could figure out how to do that was go online, which is also good because I knew a lot more about like making websites than I did about making clothes.
Yeah,
so.
Is that? Do you think that's what happens with certain brands with their quality? Like once they become very popular or very successful, then they start selling more to like a third retailer like Barney's or Saks Fifth, whatever it is, that once they have to meet these price points, their quality has to go down so that they could sell to these bigger brand, the bigger stores?
Yeah, I mean, most brands that launch nowadays start by selling, you know, start by wholesaling. That's like the traditional way. Now it's changing. You know, when we started online in 2008, like there was almost nobody doing what we were doing, like one or two other people really.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's tons, right? So I think that's the natural thing now. Like you got a new brand, new product, you do a Kickstarter maybe, you like you build a website, you put it up, you try and go direct. So as soon as you're in that department store system, again, it's sort of a numbers game. We sat down with some big stores from like Japan and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
and it sounded amazing. We're like, wow, we could be in like this spot that mm-hmm. everybody wants in the clothing world wants to be at. And then they're like, yeah, we need you to make shorts for like X amount of dollars, and you need you to make pants for X amount. And we're just sitting there. And I just remember like doing some of the math in my head. I'm like, I can make exactly what everybody else is making. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like, and there's different, you know, levels in the system, different stores that are different prices. But if you're in that, like, you can't. You know, you got to use the same fabrics and the same type of factories as everybody, as your competition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you're not really staying true to your brand name in general.
that's definitely true.
It's definitely that kind of a drop in quality.
And it's, you know, the more you pay, like in general, not always, like you'll get somewhat better quality until you get into the luxury world where like they pay to give you less quality, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not totally true, but you know, like there's no value in a crocodile versus a cow leather or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Except that it's much harder to get the crocodile leather, right?
Yeah. And it takes a little more to.
You don't need either, really. So.
Mm-hmm. I was watching one of the videos you have on YouTube, and it's you're giving a speech, and you started talking about Invisible on Everest, and you showed the picture of the dudes who climbed Everest, and they looked like they're just wearing suits.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. Like, I feel like I need one of those big North Face. Pull over one size, like just camping suits, just to walk around New York City, let alone climb Everest.
That's a crazy story. First of all, apparently the dude actually didn't climb in a. He just kept a tweed jacket in his. It was like the 20s, and so he
in
was
case
like
some ladies came by.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh, the photos. Like, I got to put on my tweed jacket."
Okay.
Apparently, but the clothes that was George Mallory.
Mm-hmm.
He they think he's the first white person to get to the top of Everest. But they don't really... they found his body almost at the top, mm-hmm. and he was facing down. So they think he got to the top. They think he actually died because he broke his heat seal to take a photo up there or something.
Oh,
yeah. Oh shit.
There's a part of Everest, I can't remember what it's called, like the something rainbow, where there's so many dead bodies in like bright colored jackets that just looks crazy.
Yeah, no, I have a friend who made it partway up Everest, and then another friend of his broke his leg. Really crazy story. And they're like bringing him down, but he said apparently there's like one part where you basically have to like climb over the dead Spaniard to like...
Whoa, that's gnarly.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. I don't want to tell somebody else's story.
But no,
it's,
of course,
yeah, it's pretty nuts, you know. Mm-hmm. But they got his friend out, so which is, you know, the key thing.
I like how Everest has still been this, even as technology advances, this kind of like mile marker for like human discovery. And like, I feel like it's gonna be a real bummer once they have like lifts. What am I doing? Is it too close? No, sorry. Lifts to like go all the way up. Like you could just sit in a little cart. It just takes you up Everest.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's still really hard, but it's also kind of like, well, it's kind of like, why?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like a lot of people go up there and have like these Sherpas carrying all their gear and stuff. It's like, come on, you know? Like if you're gonna do it, at least carry your own freaking stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can realize how hard it is. Mm-hmm. Right? Not that it sounds really hard.
No, totally. At least, but, if you're going to do it right.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a package tour now, you know, and people die every year and whatnot, but it's a package tour. You buy your guide, you buy your Sherpas, you buy your gear.
They die from food poisoning because the sushi they bought went bad or something.
Nah, you can't. It's high risk endeavor, for sure.
One of the cool things I like is that, and you've talked about before, not having any logos on the clothing themselves. Yeah. But you say, what I'd really like is that you say you have your signature on the inside. And I think that's a really, not subtle, but very interesting point that you're willing to stand behind. Because, I mean, a person's signature, like you stand behind it. It's like I believe in this. I wrote down, like, this is what I trust in this. And the fact that you guys are doing that, I think, is really, really cool in a way. And the fact that there's no logos on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not asking anybody to advertise for me.
And that's what clothes have become.
Yeah, it's totally what it is, and it's like I don't want to advertise anybody else's stuff, and I'm not asking anybody to advertise my stuff, you know, but we're gonna make sure you know we stand behind every product. So that's what there's plenty of logos on the inside. It's clear, it's strong. This is an outlier product, and you just bought it, and we stand behind it. Mm-hmm. But you know, you get stickers for free if you really want to advertise.
I have some on my bike.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
No, we're not asking people to go out and do the dirty work for us. Yeah. We're going to do that ourselves.
You ever see the R. Crumb documentary? There's a part where he's in like Manhattan, and it's in the 90s, and he's sitting like in a coffee shop. He's just looking outside, and he's like, what happened with people? Now everyone's just a walking billboard, and like they're showing people like giant Nike jackets and stuff like that. And he's just wearing like a little, like a tweed jacket and a button up and glasses. And he's like, everyone just looks insane. It's just the brightest colors and like all this writing. And now what they were doing, I think with starting to put logos on clothing has now done the opposite. It's become white noise and it's become kind of in the background to see things with logos. But now when I wear the button down or in the pants, people will ask me where it's from because it doesn't have any logos and because you can see the quality in the stitching. And it's just like, ironically, it stands out without standing out.
Yeah, I mean, we try and, you know, we try and make clothing that doesn't exist on the market, you know, and it's subtle. We're not trying to make it the loudest stuff out there, but I think that there's a kind of subtle energy that comes through.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Oh, I was saying just... Yeah, there's like a little short in that thing. So yeah, so just don't hold it. They just hold it like on the
fine.
Hold the shaft.
I like to. Oh, Cornell.
Because if you like grab the base, it'll be over.
Okay, thank you. Ongoing dick joke. What's your closet look like? I bet you ever seen like when Doug opens his closet, the cartoon show, and he just has like 80 of the same outfit.
Yeah, it's just sweater vests and shorts.
Yeah.
No, I mean I'm trying to not have a closet.
In general?
Yeah, but that's sort of like the unwritten goal of Outlier that I don't think we'll ever really get to, but I would love to just have one set of clothes that I could travel the world with, not carry a bag, just be like, I got everything right here. You know, in the winter, obviously, you're wearing all of it, and then you got to figure out how to sort of carry it when it gets warmer. But, you know, I want to have as little stuff as possible. That's kind of... And that's how we design things.
That's what Tyler Durden says in Fight Club. And he's like, in the future, we'll just have all leather clothes that we never have to change. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah.
I love that idea. I've got this thing where I just wear, like, the same few, like you're saying, or the same few things over and over again. But for some reason, I always carry, like, whenever I move, if I move different apartments, I just have, like, just crap that I take with me. And I'm always like, why do I still have this stuff? Like, why do I have these shirts and these pants? Like, they just
I'm never going to wear it.
They just end up, like, in, like, a couple boxes, like, under my bed or in a closet somewhere. And they just never get unpacked, but I still keep taking them with me.
Yeah, no, it's kind of crazy, actually, because I, you know, most people, when they move into their apartment, it's empty, and they start filling it.
Yeah.
You know, I sublet from a friend of mine, and I took over the lease. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved in, the thing was full of shit, like not my shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been just slowly trying to get my apartment to zero, basically. Yeah. It's like inbox zero. I want apartment zero, like nothing in there.
Yeah,
yeah, that's nice.
Obviously, like, there's stuff you need, and it's hard.
But toilet paper, food.
Yeah, toilet paper is useful. The bed is pretty useful.
That's the first thing you throw out. Like, damn it.
Well, you got to get those seashells, you know?
The three seashells from Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Funniest thing of any movie ever that no one talks about.
Yeah.
Remember that? No, I don't. I
Demolition Man, the movie.
I remember the movie, but
so there's a point where Sylvester Stallone's now in the future, and he's in the police station, and he comes out, and he's like, "Hey, you guys are out of toilet paper," and then what's that guy? He was
Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider's like, he doesn't know about the three seashells, and apparently that's what they use instead of toilet paper, but they don't explain it ever.
Yeah.
And it comes up a few times, but just
right.
That was genius.
Yeah. So somebody's got to invent that, right? Yeah. It's about 2015 now.
I've spent way too much time thinking about how it would work. I'm like, there's one scoop, and then you use the other one to scoop out. And
yeah, I don't know. Who knows, man? Who knows? I mean, we'll probably find out in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Nike's about to drop the Back to the Future self-lacing shoes, right? So, so we get that, and then three seashells are next.
And seen the hoverboard video that Tony Hawk was on.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
I think so.
We're doing it, guys.
Yeah. I love like none of those movies ever considered the internet. Like,
not at all.
Like, they're like, oh, flying cars, that's gonna happen. But no one is ever like, oh, there's gonna be this World Wide Web with all the information on it.
So you can basically talk to anybody it's telepathy, basically.
Yeah,
they've invented like telepathy. We can like talk to almost anybody in the world at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a little piece of glass.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Is there? I feel like, for some reason, just based on the look of the website and the clothes, are you into like weird like electric music, like just beeps and boops and stuff like that?
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah, I figured.
I mean, I grew up in New York, so I grew up on hip hop. So, I've been known to listen to some pretty pared down electronic music as well.
What's your favorite album right now?
I've been listening to, on that side of things, like if you want the weird side of things, this guy Ben Frost, who makes this kind of like. It's crazy. He described that he came from like the punk rock, like kind of noise scene, and then he kind of discovered electronic stuff along the way. And he said he made his latest record by watching rave videos with the sound off and imagining what the music was
that's
like.
Awesome.
And it's like just kind of crazy noise, electronic, and then it's weird. It's like got like really sweet like melodies buried in there, but it's basically like noise at the same time. But I listen to that when I work out, like pretty much religiously for the last year.
Oh wow, that's awesome. What's the album called?
It's called Aurora.
Aurora, okay.
Ben Frost,
like Aurora, Illinois. Illinois.
I don't know.
I'll Google it.
I'm not good at
I'll use that
spelling.
World Wide Web we were talking about. I heard so many good things.
And then I, you know, what else? On the flip, you know, I love Pop Can from Jamaica. He's like kind of a young dancehall artist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. And there's a dude up here actually who produced it in Brooklyn called Dre Skull.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got a studio up here in Greenpoint, and he's been doing all this stuff down in Jamaica. Like, and really, it's pretty much kind of like, I don't know, best of both worlds in certain ways. He's taking, like, really, like, clean, advanced electronic production and making amazing dance hall.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So that's cool. And then trying to think other new stuff that I've been really into.
That's fine. Yeah,
no, D'Angelo is good.
Oh, that's right.
It's chill. It's a little mumbly sometimes, but it's good. But yeah, and then I listen to all my old music too, and I got you know, that's the beauty of Spotify, man. It's like everything is there.
Everything's
like,
there.
Why get new music?
You it's got weird.
Everything.
Yeah.
There's so much old stuff that I've been discovering on. Like, there's this. This is a great subreddit. It's like the post-punk / shoegaze subreddit. And as much as I'm into that genre, I thought I knew everything that was out there, but there's so much stuff that's just out there that people from all over the world can just put in this one place, and you're like, huh.
And that was like a 3-year period or something.
Yeah.
Shoegaze.
Yeah, and there's
like
just...
The Ride and the...
Yeah.
My Bloody Valentine. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much stuff. So much stuff to listen to. So yeah, like, I mean... You can take, like, you know, from like 1986 to like 1994, and there's just like
good years.
Yeah.
Good years.
An insane amount of stuff.
That was one of the best shows I ever saw, was My Bloody Valentine.
Really?
I think it was Roseland. Not Roseland, the Ritz. The Ritz, which was the old Studio 54.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's what's it like, Webster Hall now, right?
Is that Webster Hall now?
That was the original Ritz downtown, way back. That's before my era. it was a crazy show because it just sounded like a wall of noise.
Mm-hmm.
But you, like, the whole crowd was going nuts, and then my friend recorded it, and if you just dropped the mid range,
mm-hmm.
all the songs were there. It was crazy. Like, it sounded crazy. Like it was like a total wall of noise, but like somehow everybody's brain was like reacting like it was music, and then like. You just dropped the mid-range, and, like, all the songs, like, just, they, like, sounded like they were, like, off the album, basically.
Oh, weird.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's so weird. One of my, the things that I really enjoy about, because, A, I commute everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I really despise taking public transportation. It takes forever. People ask me for money. is that if I do get caught in the rain, it's not that the pants are waterproof, but the fact that they dry so fast is awesome. And I talk about... how drying is like the worst thing in the whole process of clothes. Can you talk more about? I was confused about, like, ecologically.
So we sat down with Parsons, and it's kind of like a failed study. We tried to do a study with Parsons on like the life cycle of our garments,
mm-hmm.
And it kind of fell apart in the middle. But we learned a lot in the process, and it's really crazy if you look at how much energy goes into making, you know. All the way through from, like, the fibers. So if you're talking about cotton, you got to, you know, plow the fields and, you know, mm-hmm. bring water to them and pick the cotton and sort it and cart it. And then if you're talking about, like, a nylon, you know, that's petroleum-based. So you got to start with oil, and then you got to get it out of the ground.
I have no
idea. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anything plastic comes from oil, you
of
know,
course,
basically.
Yeah.
Now there's some bio sources people are working on and stuff. But so you can actually start with, like, corn oil. But yeah, so, like, you know, you go through this whole chain all the way through, and it's actually super efficient at those big, crazy industrial stages, because it's not like they're not making one pan at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. like 100 million pants.
Turn on the machines. I need a pair of pants.
So, but your dryer in your house is like just blowing up energy, you know. It's like usually gas powered, or if it's electric, it's blowing up your bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime you're trying to make heat, so like your toaster oven, you know, that throws off your electric bill too. But the dryer uses something crazy like 60% of the energy that used in the entire life cycle of the garment, from making the fibers to weaving the sewing it.
Wow.
And then your dryer is just where it all goes. The washer takes some too, but so that's it's pretty crazy.
I mean, I've like I said before, the shorts, I think I've washed them once.
No, you gotta wash them more than that.
I know, but like, wash, I'll rinse them in like water and like air dry them and stuff like
oh
that.
yeah
but like actually through a wash, like, in the machines, like, once. They never smell. They look kind of gnarly when they're a little beat up. What's up, Sean? I remember.
The water resistance. The water resistance goes up. I like to throw. We say throw them in the dryer like for like 5-10 minutes every couple months. It helps with the water resistance. For you know, and most of our products have the, if they're not wool, they have like water resistance basically. And so, but yeah, beyond that, yeah, the more you can dry your stuff flat, and our stuff dries really quickly, so that helps. The better off it is for the world.
You guys work with Scholler, with like, how, do you guys have like a really good relationship with now? Are you guys the only people making clothes with their stuff? Like, were they weirded out by any like?
Maybe now because they make their stuff in Switzerland, so everything the Swiss franc just went nuts. Everything's like 10% more expensive.
Oh wow!
We're gonna have to deal with that. It's not fun. But no, I mean, we're not the only people who use their stuff, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
In the outdoor world, and in the more like fashion world, it's still not cheap, but it's like not like in the outdoor world, it's like the top. Like the people have never seen anything more expensive than that. And so a lot of people are scared to mess with those prices. Like basically in the outdoor world, if it costs more than Gore-Tex, nobody uses it. It's kind of like the rule. Like Gore-Tex did a really good job at like branding themselves as like the pinnacle, and like nobody can justify like spending more than that, even if it's a better fabric.
Actually, it's better, and not so loud.
Yeah. So yeah, we have a really good relationship with them. They, you know, they're a real company. They're a lot bigger than we are, actually. They sell a lot in the equestrian market. And then they have lots of like funny niches. So like Arc'teryx. They can't justify using shoulder fabrics as like a main fabric in any of their things, but they use it for trim. So a lot of their pockets and stuff are working with the shoulder fabric.
Okay.
Or at least they did for a long time. I can't speak to the most thing. A lot of things are changing over there, so I can't speak to what's going on now. But you know, they used to sell to like chair manufacturers and.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So they have a, and then there's like a fashion side, like, you know, like the Pradas and stuff use it sometimes. You know, they're really, on the technical side, like they are by far the ones pushing the hardest. And they have a sense that they're one of the few that have a sense of both what's going on in fashion and what's going on in the outdoor world as well.
That's awesome. Yeah they seem like. I don't know, from what I saw about them and I looked a little bit into them, it's just like they're just pumping out this gnarly material. And it's not like only you guys are really taking full advantage of how awesome it is that I saw, but I, you know, I'm very limited in what I know about it.
Yeah, I mean, we use, you know, some people use it and they don't say they're using it. It's actually rare, actually. They've done pretty good branding. But no, a lot of it, if you really want to find a lot of it in the equestrian world is where... I think their main market is actually
like those equestrian pants, like those khaki pants, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Like stuff like that people are riding their horses in.
I rode my horse here today, so it's nice. Locked up outside.
So like jodhpurs and whatnot. Like I think it's mostly towards the women's market, but I'm not sure. But that's like a really strong space for them. And but yeah, you know, we love working with them. Except for this, the Swiss franc thing is brutal, man. You know, it's like the whole world is like deflating except for the Swiss franc.
Yeah, they're just like killing like, it.
Like, oh, everything is any cheaper except for our stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, why can they use rubles?
You were saying before how you get weirded out when you see people wearing all of your brand. Is there any other brands that you think are doing something really cool that you would support or you think is worth looking into?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of brands out there. I think, you know, like Icebreaker, like I think our merino is a little bit nicer, but I think they do a fantastic job. Like they really built that market. You know, they're like a little bit sportier and a little bit more aggressive on the price. So like the quality's not quite as good, but I think they do a fantastic job at define, you know, at where they're at in the market. Let's see. You know, our friend Mission Workshop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The bag brand.
Yeah, I still want one of those bags. Those things are gnarly.
Yeah, no, they're friends of ours. They do a serious job. There's companies we've worked with, so like Hyperlite, Mountain Gear, we did some bags with them. They're doing amazing stuff. They're sort of focused on this, maybe overly focused on this idea of like ultralight backpacking.
Mm-hmm.
They like to, these guys like weigh every single thing they go out into the backcountry with.
And, oh,
like,
wow.
Get like trying, you know, they have some target, like they'll be like, I want to go out in the backcountry for 2 weeks with 5 pounds or 8 pounds or whatever it is.
Interesting.
You know?
We all have to have goals, I guess.
Yeah, and in order to do that, you got to weigh every single item down to the ounce or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they make fantastic packs. And then, like Stone Island is a company that we look at, and like I think does really interesting stuff.
This is cool because other than Mission, I've never heard of any of these brands.
Yeah.
I like this. I'm going to look into these.
Yeah.
You guys did a collaboration with Vans on some shoes a while back.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
We don't usually go to trade shows. We go to trade shows to search for stuff.
Okay.
Project did something with Selectism a few years ago, and they gave us a free booth, and we're like, all right, we'll go and see what happens.
I guess.
it's kind of funny because you spend a lot of time just telling people we don't wholesale at these things because it's really for people to wholesale.
Yeah.
But a couple dudes from Vans rolled by, and we had done a different shoe collaboration with a company called Fight, small company. That's another one well worth mentioning.
Okay.
They have a new store over on Bowery and Prince.
Really?
Yeah, so, and they're doing sort of like more high-end sneaker with like really nice materials. And so we had done a shoe with them, and then Vans came by, saw that, and saw our other stuff, and they were like really interested. And so we started talking with them. And, you know, the shoe we had done with Fight was like $350.
Yeah.
And so Vans was really intriguing to us because we were like, you know, let's try and make something for under $100 with Vans. Like, can we do it? And so we made a really cool shoe with them, but we kind of learned. I don't think I'd ever make another $90 shoe. I was, you know, for what it was great. But like to make a true outlier shoe, it's gotta, you know, I don't know if it needs to be $350, but you know,
somewhere in the middle.
We haven't found the sweet spot. Shoes are really hard.
Yeah,
we've done it, you know, twice now, and we did a couple iterations with Fight, and like 2.5 times basically, and. I'm a little wary of doing it again.
Of course,
But if we do, like, we'd want to, you know, we basically, like, we know how hard it is now, which is the worst time to start anything.
Yeah.
It's like, it's way better to start before you realize how hard it is.
Yeah.
That was cool. It was fun.
You've talked about how your guys are, started because of commuting, but you're not a bike brand.
Yeah.
And the Tailored Performance tag is really intelligent that way, but I mean the market that you guys are going now is more just menswear in general.
Yeah, I mean, what we really look at, like when we look at companies, is Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And when Apple makes a new product, they don't sit around and be like, "Oh, we're selling to 18 to 25 year olds." Mm-hmm. You know, they like, we're going to make the best possible product, right? We're going to make something that, and then obviously some people are going to like it and some people are not, but like it's about the product. And that's sort of how we approach it. We're going to make the best possible pants and the best possible shirt. And
like the audience will come for that because
yeah,
that's
what
they want.
We're going to communicate why this is a better shirt or why this is a better pair of pants, and people are either going to respond to it or not. And so that's how we kind of approach it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the bike stuff, you know, when we started, we were very, very bike focused, and that was very deliberate. I knew like these pants that we'd made, like had other uses. Like they were better for like business travel or for just, you know, backpacking around the world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to keep the design focus really tight, so that we didn't get sloppy, basically. You know, like when you try and do too many things at once, you don't do any of them well. So we were super focused. And then what we learned after the first year or two is everybody just thought of us as like a bike company.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of learned that we didn't fit in the bike world that well. We didn't really, I think there was a small segment, you know, Prolly basically.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And a few other people in that world that we were super down with. But if we go out to like Interbike, which is like the big bike trade show, we just look around and be like, what the hell? Like, who are all these people? It's like, you know, these like ex-racer, like now it's just, I couldn't relate. And then we go to these, the outdoor shows to look for fabric, and they actually are run by the same company. So it's like a really pretty direct comparison. And we go to this thing called Outdoor Retailer for fabric, and we'll be like, we love it here. Like, these people are awesome. Like, we like hanging out. Like, we might not like do the same thing on the weekend as like what most of these guys are, but like, we're, you know, go out and drink with them, and we can relate easily. And the vibe was like, just, we fit right in, and we're like, all right, we're much closer to the outdoor thing than the bike thing. And then, you know, we're in the city, so we're not like, we definitely are not in the heart of the outdoor. Right?
Yeah, you're not mountain biking around and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're not like out in the backcountry for weeks on end. And, you know, Tyler's hanging off some rocks right now, actually, so that's not really my thing. But
yeah,
it's like in Red Rocks, hanging off the side of
some
cliff.
I'll stay indoors, thanks.
No, I mean, I love the outdoors, and I love going out there for you know, a day, 2 days, 3 days. But after that, I'm like, yo, get me a shower and like a restaurant. So yeah, we started trying to figure out, like, you know, how to not just be the bike pant. You know, like, we got a lot of people would be like, I love your pants, but I don't ride a bike. And I'd just be like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Like, that's not what it's about. And so, you know, and part of it is, like, when you look, you know, like, it's a thing now. There's a lot of companies that make stuff for bike commuting, actually. And
Levi's and some, made those commuters.
Yeah, and they did a good job. Like, they did a really nice job, like, kind of, I like what they did. John was involved with that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit as a consultant. But you know, a lot of times, like, it's like they have to sign it like bike.
Yeah.
It's like when you go to work in an office, like, the last thing you want to be is like the bike guy.
Yeah.
Like, your ass has got like a bike pad on it. Like, no.
You get the mud streak up your back.
Yeah, it's like the bike is how you got there, and you get off it, and then you're you.
It's like when you see those dudes that are wearing like the Ferrari Pumas and the Ferrari like jacket, and it's like, it's a car, man. Relax.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, nah, like, I want to get to my location, whether it's work or going out for a drink or, you know, and be like, okay, you know, I got here on a bike, but nobody knows. Like,
exactly.
You know, there's no reason to stress that.
Yeah, it's getting back to like the Apple thing. I love when a company makes a product that isn't, like you're saying, isn't for a particular thing, but they'll make the best thing that they can make, and they'll put it out there, and then, let's say, like, 6 months, 8 months afterwards, you start seeing it popping up in, like, different things. Like, I love it when I'll see, like, a construction worker with an iPad or something, or, like a preschool teacher using an app to teach some kids or something. It's just like that thing. Like, you can see, like, a pair of Outlier pants in a business meeting, and then you go outside and you see a courier riding his bike down the street with it. You're not trying to make it for a particular thing. You're just making an awesome thing that everyone can use. Everyone can find a good use for it because it's a good product.
Yeah, so no, I mean, that's what we try and do. And you can see it, like, if you come to the Open Studio or the sample, you know, the as-is sale we're doing right now. Like, you know, it's definitely, like, you know, the core audience, like 20s, 30s dudes. You know, most of what we make is for men. We make a few women's products. But then you get guys who are, like, 50, 60, like, and they love it. You know, and I never want to, like, just make it for, like, you know, 12 cool kids in, you know, some corner somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we want to make stuff for everybody.
Definitely. I remember seeing the video of the making of an Outlier shirt, and Tyler's on rollers. Like, you guys are, like, pinning the shirt, like, trying to figure out the fit and stuff, and he's on rollers. It's like, that's so smart to take that way, because you know that this is a good use for the shirt, and that's a big problem with a lot of shirts, is that, like you said before, you're talking about three-piece suits and how people think of them as uncomfortable, like stiff. And it's like, that's how they are now because they used to be custom made. But it's like, whenever I had to put on a bun down, I just felt like, I was like, ugh, it's terrible, all stiff. But I want a shadow box in your shirt, you know, like, I really like it.
Yeah, that's awesome. The three-piece suit is a functional, it's a layering system.
Yeah.
It's a super functional garment if it's done right. You know, it's Patagonia likes to say they created layering, But no, that's what a three-piece suit is.
So. Yeah. That's so interesting they would say that. He created layering.
Well, they recreated it. People, in a way, like, people just forgot. It's really funny in clothing. Like, people just forgot how to I've seen people blame it on, like, indoor heating. You know, all clothes used to be functional because your house never get warmer than, like, 50 degrees. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Fireplace can, like, warm you up for, like, 5-10 feet.
But, yeah.
Like, you walk to the next room and it's cold, right? So everybody's clothes were, like, functional back then. And as soon as you, like, living in this air-conditioned, like, perfect, mm-hmm. you know, temperature-regulated world, like, your clothes don't really have to do that much.
And then the quality can go down because the necessity isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah, that's like in a little Muay Thai stuff. The new in Thailand, there's just a huge stadium called Lumpini Stadium, and the old stadium wasn't air conditioned, and it was like super hardcore and just like really gritty and just gross in there, and like all the fighters were trying to knock each other out because they wanted to end the fights early. Like this it's like 200 degrees. I want to get out of here. I want to go, like, you know, eat my noodles and stuff. But Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's kind of, yeah, that's a little bit.
Yeah. But the new Lumpini Stadium is air conditioned. And, like, people that are watching the fights at the new stadium say that everyone's, like, a lot more relaxed. And it's a little easier because it's, like, it's really comfortable in there.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know, man. The fans don't like it, but I'm sure the fighters love it.
Because I feel the immediacy. Well, yeah. But I guess that immediacy of getting the fuck out of there helps you want to knock people out.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. I mean, it sounds like the old way was better. But
yeah. I like that. I like the idea that some things are difficult. You know, I like the idea that in the summer when we're training in the gi, I don't open the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because learning the skill to be comfortable in an uncomfortable position is a huge part of it.
Yeah,
and if we always make everything nice, it's just like we're losing a human skill.
Yeah,
that might not always be there.
Yeah, and then when the Klingons come, they're gonna be like, man.
Are they not our friends?
Wait, well, when they first
that one dude, right? He's on the ship.
Well, when they first came,
okay.
We weren't friends, but he then we became friends like a little while later. But then when they first came, they're like, oh, humans are so soft. They just beat the crap out of everyone.
Are you a Star Trek fan?
Not a huge fan.
So yeah, me neither.
I've seen it, but
he loves it.
Yeah,
he tries to bring it every conversation.
Man, I've ruined so many dates.
It's like they're paying you.
Yeah, I've ruined so many dates because I reference everything to Star Trek. Because sometimes I'll do it too soon.
That's rule number one, right?
Yeah,
not to like the eighth date.
Yeah, just like you're like so, we just do this under the table.
Yeah, does this mean anything to you? Is this nothing? Isn't nothing? Okay, all right, cool, all right.
Is there anything that you go back to, like? I sometimes read the same book a lot or certain movies for, like, not inspiration, but just to, like, kind of recharge those batteries of why I'm doing something. Is there anything that you found that you do that kind of thing with? It could be a place or something like that, but anything that you found for yourself?
Well, I'm a walker, so.
Oh, okay. So there you go, yeah.
That's one. I'm trying to think of a book or something that's more concrete. But, I mean, one of the things I love, like, we're here in, like, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and if you walk, you know, about 10-15 minutes, like, you'll get to Newton Creek,
mm-hmm.
which is insane.
It's a whole different world.
It's a freaking, and it's like 4 miles long, and it's a crazy industrial world where, like, and there's no people there if you go on the weekends, like, mm-hmm. at all. And, like, so I love biking around there, walking around there a little bit, like, just kind of, like, it's a different world. We used to shoot a lot of photos there. We probably will shoot some more down there, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you go from, like, the heart of, like, you know, 21st century New York City culture to, like, you know, the ghost of, like, an industrial past. And, you know, it's more wild than a lot of freaking, you know, wilderness, too.
Yeah, and so, in a weird way.
I love just getting out there sometimes and just kind of, you know, walking alone, I guess, right? And,
nice. Yeah.
A winky wink.
Yeah. And, just kind of, like, trying to process thoughts in, like, a, you know, with as little distractions as possible.
Just
float through on the thinking process. Books, I don't know. We try and get a lot of, you can see, it's actually because of the sample sale, they're all kind of messed up here.
No, that's all right.
But, there's a lot of influences we flow through.
Zen landscapes. I want to look at that.
Yeah.
That looks awesome. Yeah, you guys do a really good job with your photos of your Sorry. Sorry. No, don't be sorry. Yeah, it's just like, it definitely looks unlike most fashion photos I've seen. And it's just like, it gives a good idea of how useful the garments are. When it's like the guys on rocks or the Iceland one is amazing. And it's like people moving around a lot. You know, it really shows off that aspect of the clothes.
Yeah, you know, like when we first started, it was like me and Tyler shooting with like a, you know, medium price DSLR, you know, whatever we could afford. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like the baller camera. And we just, you know, we shot people on bikes and there was a lot of energy and we shot when the light was good because it's the trick.
Yeah.
And then, but as we got bigger, like we had to figure out other things, right? You know, we moved away from the bikes and then, and so we really focus on like organic kind of natural movement. Like, you know, there's no posing. And that could just mean walking or even, even standing. It's like you can stand in a pose like a fashion model or you can stand like naturally. Yeah. Like as long as it's like, and so that's something we put a lot of effort in to make, make the photos like have that kind of organicness to them as possible.
Definitely comes through. I don't want to take any more of your time. You've given us definitely more than enough. Anything you want
to
add?
No, I was just saying like the, that we got to get a new table.
I didn't
table.
Touch it. Well, we'll get a new one. We'll when all this podcasting money comes in, we'll get a new one. Abe, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. At Abe1X on Twitter, at Outlier, outlier.cc.
Yeah.
And Open Studios are Friday, 4 to 7?
Yeah, we're not going to do them in February, though.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you came to the as is say, you saw that new room downstairs. So.
Oh, that's going to be your guys' room now.
Yeah, so we're taking that over. So we need February to chill.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to switch stuff over. But I don't think we're going to do any open studios till March.
Okay.
But then hopefully it'll be bigger and better. And
is that idea kind of is the idea for the downstairs to keep it as an open studio that's easier to navigate through or have like
gonna,
a store?
We're going
to
move. It's going to be we're going to move all our shipping down there.
Okay.
So it's a big move.
Yeah.
But we'll have a better, more permanent place. You know, like the changing rooms in the open studio right now are actually our fabric library.
Okay. Noticed.
We do this transformation. So we'll have like real changing rooms and things like that. So
cool.
It's not a full on store, you know, we're in an out of the way location. Hopefully it'll be a little easier for people to come by and try things on and test stuff out.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll keep you guys posted on that too.
Absolutely. I come here a lot. Again, like I only like to really push or talk about things that I really use or really believe in, really have my thoughts behind. You know, this brand I've been wearing since 2009, and I can't tell you guys enough good things. Have you ever seen the Chuck Norris action pants when he's like high kicking, like that's exactly what it feels like that. Like I feel like I could do anything in these things. And
we got a pair of those around somewhere.
Oh
actually.
Man, if you find them, you gotta let
Chuck
me know.
Chuck Norris pants?
Yeah.
Oh snap!
They're made by Century. You gotta let me know if you find them.
We can.
Well, we'll dig around.
It's in the other room. Somebody sent them to us. We were like that's we so were funny. hunting for them, and somebody found them and tracked them down. Actually, I think it was Lars, our like one of our main models. I think Lars found them on eBay and got them for us.
Sick win.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. WalkingAloneNYC.com. Click on the ad banner. Pick something up. Help us. Help you. We love you guys. At WalkingAloneNYC, at Cornell Ward. All right, we'll see you soon.
Later.
Later, kids.
Thanks a lot.